two are through. It's 100% hockey with Millard and Shannon. And both number one seeds sweep their way into the second round, John.
I don't think we should be surprised that they won, but it was pretty impressive that they both swept. I did think that Ottawa would certainly give them much more of a battle, but the Senators could not score. Whether it
Carolina
be five
never
or
trailed.
Well, and Linus Ullmark, if you know, when we do playoff previews, you say, well, Ullmark has to be the best player on the ice for Ottawa to win. Well, he was. He
best player on the ice in the series.
That's
arguably.
Right. Yeah. And he lost four games in a row. Yeah. It's amazing when you think how well he played, but he, you know, between injuries and unable to score and not just 5-on-5, but how many? They had 4 5-on-3s in four games and couldn't score really on those 5-on-3s. If you can't take advantage of special teams, you are in dire trouble in the playoffs. And LA, you know, LA wasn't going to win the series. There's just no way they were going to win the series. But I did think that they were all close games, but I thought that Colorado was impressive grinding their way through the four games.
It's funny how people looked at it. Carolina never trailed, were pushed, but pushed back and made a statement. And Colorado was underwhelming through the first three games and were criticized, and they both swept.
So let me ask you, you're the goaler on this show. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised Scott Wedgwood played all four games?
No. I was surprised Forsberg played all four games. I thought they might switch it up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Billy Ranford's the goalie coach in LA, and you wonder what kind of input he would have. Forsberg was good, though, Darren. Mm. Forsberg was really good. You couldn't fault
Ranford's
him.
More, he's not the day-to-day guy anymore. So.
No, but I guarantee you that DJ, if he's got a question, he's phoning Billy. Mm-hmm. You know,
I was expecting Los Angeles to change it up just for the sake of making a change, trying to give everybody some jump. But Wedgwood, if you're winning, why would you change?
Because they're a two-goalie system. And I do think that at some point they're going to need Mackenzie Blackwood.
Well, what did Valiquette say? Steve Valiquette said, you got seven good games by a goaltender. Every goaltender's got seven good games in a row.
According to Steve's logic, then we're going to see Blackwood in the next round.
Yeah. Just might.
Yeah, we just might. Yeah, fascinating to do that. It was, and by the way, on the topic of goaltending, give Freddie Anderson some credit. Yeah, he was very good for Carolina. He's, the criticism of him always was that he's never healthy. Well, he stayed healthy for the series, and he was fantastic. How about Taylor Hall?
Renaissance.
Spell it.
Reinnescenec.
Hall.
What I like to do with that kind of thing is just start throwing out letters and hoping people lose track.
My eyes are glazing over, so I obviously lost track. So
it was nasty. That series was nasty.
Yeah, and Rindy Gregg will have a hearing. It doesn't. The thing about the Gregg hearing is it can happen a month from now. It doesn't have to happen right away.
How dirty was that?
It was dirty. It was dirty. You know, we in hockey, people roll their eyes when we talk about the code. That was so far against the code of how it was. It's almost like it broke the Geneva Convention. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't do that. You just don't do that. So. How many
you see Warren Fogel, who was tied up with Walker. Warren Fogel almost looked and went, what are you doing?
And Warren's such a good guy. I like Warren.
Now, he did keep his glove on. I don't know whether that means anything to you or not, but the glove was on, but
Don't
it was
gloves
so
hurt?
obvious.
Don't gloves sometimes hurt too?
Yeah, but at least it's not a fist coming through your face. A
So what do you
bare
figure?
fist.
5 games? 3 games?
Probably three.
Yeah,
It
that's
was
what I think.
nasty. That's as dirty of a play as I've
Yeah.
seen in a long time.
And how about the commotion today in Ottawa?
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk not at
But
garbage
there's a
bag.
reason. He and his wife, Emma, welcomed a new child.
I
But there
know.
was like all the video of Brady leaving the ice after the handshakes and
Last?
seemingly look around. Like there's a feeling here.
Yes, there's a lot of discussion externally. But if
I
you're the
think we're
captain
headed
of
for
the
a huge offseason of player movement of guys under contract and star players under contract.
You do, huh?
Yep.
You're gonna stick with that?
I'm not only sticking with it, I'm leading the way on that. Pete DeBoer's also got a couple of opinions. The
Well,
new
and
head
here
coach of the New
and
York
he's got
Islanders.
the he's already had his movement. He's already got the new job. 4 games of did they win? I don't think they won a game.
They
They
won
didn't.
one. Yeah, they won a
But they
stinky.
did. Oh, that was the Maple Leafs, yeah.
You can't just write that off.
you should.
Yeah, maybe the way things are going. We'll get to the Leafs in just a little bit. But first, Pete DeBoer is going to join us, talk about the transaction, how it came about, and what he wants to accomplish, and how much of a head start this gives him. Also, Matthew Schaefer and that conversation. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Stay with us.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Okay, we'll get into this quickly because he's got stuff on his plate now. Pete DeBoer's got a job. He's
No more trips to
who
Italy.
knows what's going on? Are you swamped?
I am. I went from 0 to 100 really quickly. And you know what? And as great as my year off was, I've been dropped into a situation like that once before. It was actually with the Vegas job. It was mid-season, January. I was on a beach in Sarasota, Florida, with my wife and daughter, less than 48 hours later, I was coaching in Ottawa in the middle of a five-game road trip through Montreal and Boston. And this one was probably even more hectic, because it all came together within 24 hours, and I was running a practice in Long Island. So it's been a whirlwind for sure.
So let me get this straight. Julien Brisebois calls, or not Julien, sorry, Matthew Darche. Get them mixed up anyway. Matthew Darche calls you, and 24 hours later, you're hired?
Yeah.
Holy
It was
smokes.
so they were playing Carolina on the road, and they had lost, and I think it was their fifth or sixth loss in a row. And I actually happened I and I hadn't watched the New York Islanders at all. I had they weren't even, the East really wasn't on my radar to watch a lot of hockey. I've been in the West for over a decade, so if I'm watching a game, it's usually a Western game. But I happened to be watching parts of that game, flipping back and forth, and my phone rang after the game ended, and it was Matthew Darche. And I had met Matt, or I'd spoken to Matthew Darche one time before, and it was last summer. He was calling about a character reference. They were hiring Bob Bugner as an assistant coach, and Boogie had worked for me in a couple places, and he was just kind of doing a reference background check. And obviously, I had a lot of good things to say, and they ended up hiring Bob. But it was a 20-minute conversation last summer. It was the only time I had ever talked to him, and I happened to have his number in my phone because of that conversation a year ago, and it popped up Matthew Darche. So, and it still didn't cross my mind he was calling about making a coaching change. I thought it was in regard to something else. I mean, there was four games left in the season. I didn't know what it was about, but you know, maybe about a different topic. And you know, and that's when, you know, he said, I'm committed to doing something here. I want to give us a chance this year, and more importantly, moving forward. And we started talking, and you know, he made it clear that he wanted some immediacy to it. And they had a 3-day break of practices, it was a 4-day break, three full days of practices before their next game. So, you know, if we were going to do it, he wanted to do it really quickly and get me in to take advantage of that practice time.
What was it like plopping in there and the reaction by the players, the interaction there?
Well, I can tell you it was easier walking into that dressing room with those guys than it was as the former San Jose Sharks coach walking into the Vegas dressing room after the Joe Pavelski 5-minute major and us coming back and beating them in the playoffs and Turk and I kind of going at it in the news. So that was a lot easier dressing room to walk into at this point. But you know, anytime something like that happens, the players, there is a little bit of a shock to them. I mean, they're kind of, you know, you get a little bit of that deer in the headlights. What do we, you know, what's going on and what are we dealing with, especially with the timing of this? Because it so rarely happens at that point in the year. But, you know, I had some familiar faces in that dressing room. I had Bo Horvat at the Olympics. I had Schenner on some world championship teams in the past. So, you know, there was some familiar guys. Having Bob Bugner there, who I'd worked with in two spots that they had retained as an assistant, gave me some familiarity. And funny, but when I walked in the building, I realized how many people I knew from my first stint in New Jersey.
Sure.
15 years ago, because Lou Lamoriello, and Lou's known for all that loyalty, you know, he had brought all those people from those New Jersey days to the island, including Steve Pellegrini, the assistant general manager, trainers, video coaches. I mean, it was like an old high school reunion when I walked in there from my Jersey days.
What would be the advantage of having somebody like Bo, who was familiar with you from Italy, in that room? Was that, how much easier did that make it?
Oh, I think what that gives you some instant credibility with the group when that guy is in that dressing room and, you know, everyone's looking to him, because the first thing players do is they look to the guy who in the room who knows the guy coming in or has played for him at some point and says, what are we dealing with here? And, you know, so I think, you know, it gives you some instant credibility when a guy like Bo speaks.
Comparable to Pavelski in Dallas?
Oh, I would think so. I mean, you know, Joe, two different personalities. I think Bo's a quieter guy, but yeah, comparable for sure. And, you know, Pav was always a big guy for me, walking into especially in Dallas, in order to get buy-in immediately.
Matthew takes a swing, trying to get in the playoffs. But what's the advantage to going in with four games left for you for next year?
That's a great question. And you know what? Initially, you know, I had some reservation on my end about it, just, you know, for exactly that reason. What are we going to accomplish here? I mean, if we get on a run, we get in the playoffs, great. If we don't, what's the other advantage to this other than we're you know, we're rushing headlong into this. And I'll be honest with you, spending those four games and those 2 weeks with those guys, having the exit meetings with them, getting a chance to sit down and do hours of one-on-ones with the entire group at different points, was really valuable and really expedited where I would have been had I got the job in the summer, you know, and flew in to meet Bo Horvat in Muskoka or wherever he was for a day and tried to fly in and meet Matthew Schaefer wherever he was spending his time. So, you know, I think looking back now, I had some hesitation going in, but looking back now, you know, I feel like I'm way ahead because of having gone in there than I would have been.
Actually, so you mentioned Matthew Schaefer. Knowing what you know now, knowing what you watched for four games, Matthew Schaefer on the Olympic team?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, you know what? Listen, hindsight's, you know, that's easy. Yeah, and you know that. And you know what? I was in all those rooms, and it's really hard to put an 18-year-old on an Olympic team, never mind two with Celebrini and him. But having stood behind that bench now with him for four games, I'll put it this way, you know, he'll be on every Olympic team for the next 15 years. I can tell you that.
Did you know him at all? Or were you?
I didn't. I mean, he's from Stony Creek, Hamilton area, which is kind of my area where
your
I grew
backyard.
Up.
Backyard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We, you know, we have there's a lot of common people we know. But I didn't know him. And I'll tell you what a special kid. I mean, when you sit down, I mean, I read the stories about his journey, but when you sit down and actually speak to him and you get the journey from his mouth in a one-on-one setting or in a meeting type setting, and he talks about, you know, his mother getting cancer and dealing with that, and then her passing away, and then his billet mom passing away while he was playing in Erie, you know, fairly soon after, you know, the adversity of his injuries that he had through his junior career, and then to be able to pop the way he did this year, it really, really amazing. You know, it's one of those things. It's a cliche, but he really has some personality. He's a better person than he is a hockey player, and he's one of the best hockey players on the planet. But when you sit down, there's some real substance to this kid.
What do you like most about his game?
You know what, he attacks every shift. He's attacking, and he's doing it. He's not doing it recklessly, which is really rare. It's one thing to have a young Colt defenseman that's attacking every shift, and you know he's either creating something or giving up a breakaway. This guy does it with some defensive conscience to him. You know, he's not afraid to dig in defensively and stick his nose in physically. And, you know, he's got a defensive competitiveness to him and a defensive conscience to him. But he still maintains that attack mindset. So rare for a young defenseman to have both those things.
The other thing, and this is just my observation, what appears to have happened on Long Island is that he seems to, just by his play, to have galvanized this team, because every other player on the team now knows how special he is and they want to protect him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really similar to what's happened in San Jose with Celebrini. You know, I haven't seen two young players step into the league and really turn around a franchise, you know, like those two guys have as early as they have. And it's not just their play. You're right, John. It's the group around them have recognized how special they are and are pushing that agenda now and getting excited about that agenda now because of their presence.
You talked about the exit meetings. you've done exit meetings with teams before when you've had players for more than 1 year, let alone just four games. Did in these exit meetings, would you have done a little more listening than talking because it's just a limited period of time?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a chance for me to really listen to, you know, what they felt, you know, kind of went wrong as the season went on and how they ended up in the place they ended up in. And my part was just more on, you know, where do we go from here, you know, and the plan going forward, starting in training camp next year. But it was a lot of listening and listen, you know, coaching is a tough job, and Patty Waugh did a great job there. That team won a lot of games over the last couple of years and overachieved in a lot of people's eyes at different points. There was a lot of good stuff that went on there too. I think I'm excited about keeping some of that good stuff. I'm excited about some of the things I think we can do differently and bring to the table to kind of move the group forward. But, it wasn't a situation where the guys quit on the coach or the team was a disaster. It just wasn't working.
Take a break. We'll continue with Pete DeBoer on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Stay with us.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
You saw a small sample size, but you've been around long enough. Is there a difference between the East and the West right now, style-wise?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there always has been. You know what? I think it's probably almost shifted. It's funny to say, but when I moved to the West, to San Jose, in 2012, the West was a grind, a defensive grind. LA Kings, you know, and Daryl Sutter and that mindset.
Big boy hockey.
Big boy hockey everywhere in the West at that point to get through. You know what? And then I think it kind of shifted a little bit. And you know what? Probably 5-6 years ago, you know, I'm thinking of the Bruins in their heyday when Butch was there, and they went to the finals. Bergeron was still playing big boy hockey, Florida, big boy hockey. And the West kind of flipped and got a little more, I think, offensive and a little more dynamic. And now I think it shifted back again. I think the East is really young and exciting. And I think the West now, when you look at Minnesota and Dallas and Vegas, you're back to that defensive grinding again. So it's funny how it shifts, and it's not once a decade. I mean, that's three shifts, probably division or conference to conference in the last, 12 years that I was out West. I think it's a product of just, the copycat piece of what we do. Is, you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. If the Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup built around a defensive structure and big defensemen, everyone out West tries to go that way because they know they have to get through that in order to get to a cup. But it's interesting to watch. And it's interesting how, each conference kind of copycats, the best team in their conference, because that's the group you have to get through in order to get a chance to play for a cup.
Anyway, you haven't mentioned the biggest difference, and you have lived it, coaching in New Jersey and in Florida. How many more nights are you going to sleep in your own bed? Seriously.
The travel is huge, John, but I think the bigger piece is practice time. I mean,
right.
Honestly, like from a coaching perspective, in the West, the practice time is so limited because of the travel. It happened in the schedule that we had some practice time in Long Island when I got there. But when I went back and looked at their calendar, I couldn't believe how many more practices they had available to them in the past month than we would have had when I was in San Jose or Dallas. So that's a huge advantage.
What would you like to do with that practice time? Like put yeah. your stamp. What's your stamp? What the tweaks that you're looking
yeah.
at?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's any secret when you take over a team. I mean, the first thing you do, and again, I didn't watch the Islanders at all. They weren't even on my radar. I wasn't watching hockey, you know, based on who I thought might get fired or what jobs might become available. I watched hockey to watch hockey as a fan or a coach, and I was trying to watch some of the higher end teams in the league, you know, looking to try and get better for wherever I was going to go next. So the Islanders weren't a team that I had watched. So when I got the job, you immediately dive in as quickly as possible to the analytics to see, you know, where can you make the biggest difference right away? And what do we have to address right away? And the thing that jumped off the page, I believe they were 31st in expected goals against and 32nd in high danger chances against, or flip those numbers. But bottom line is that defensively, you know, we had to tighten things up immediately. You know, they have some goal scoring issues, but that was secondary. It was, you know, you've got a world-class goalie in net. Let's give him a chance defensively to win us some games. And you know, so that was the area of concentration, and we've got a lot of other things we've got to talk about and can get at, but that's going to be the area of concentration going forward. And I think with the goaltending they have, if we can clean up our defensive metrics, you're going to give yourself a chance to win every night.
Do you change the philosophy of this team at all now that you have a summer to do it and now you understand where they are?
Well, I think the two go hand in hand. I think whatever you're concentrating on as a coach bleeds into the players' identity of how they want to play. I mean, that's what you want. You know, as a coach coming in, you want your fingerprints on that team, in the identity you think they're going to play with. So for me, you know, we're not going to become, you know, the best defensive team in the league. We're not going to sit back. We have Matthew Schaefer. We have some offensive players, but I think as a group, you know, we want to have an identity that we're going to be hard to play against defensively. We've got the best goaltender in the world. And we also have, you know, one of, if not in the conversation, the best defenseman in the world, at least going forward. You know, we want to be able to attack around that too.
What was Sue's reaction when you got off the phone?
I think she was happy to get me out of the house. I think I think she had the car running and the suitcase packed and see you later. It was the first winter in 30 years that, you know, we've actually spent that much time together, and it was great. You know, I said during the winter, I think maybe on a conversation with you guys or one of the other shows I did, that you know, I really felt I was where I was meant to be this year for a bunch of reasons. You know, I think I mentioned you know, the Olympics and my parents' health. My son's a senior at college. I got to see him play. So I really believe everything happened for a reason. You know, I also think, you know, I'm meant to be back working again now. And for a lot of reasons, including the health of my marriage. So.
Do you have to change any of your summer plans because now you got this
oh
job?
My god, yeah absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow to fly back to New York for pro scouting meetings, and then, you know, I've got to go in for the draft and development camp. I've got we've got to fly in and find a place to lease. We've got to Sue on her end's got to get a move together. Our stuff's in a storage unit in Dallas, get it to New York and cars. So, I mean, it upends, you know, a lot of things.
Darren will drive one of your cars across the
country. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that.
I'm curious. You know, you're a lifer. You're a coaching lifer.
Yeah.
And we talk about these cycles all the time. And, you know, you get let go. And then over time, your stock builds up again. How do you manage that psychologically? You have to have a pretty damn strong constitution to be able to deal with this on a 3-5 year basis every time. I can't imagine the amount of change.
Yeah. It's not easy. I think you have to have a confidence in what you do. You have to block out the noise because there's always a lot of noise on the outside. And I'll be honest with you, John, and I've said this before too, the effect is much more on your family than it is on you. And that's always the hardest part. You know, when you get fired or, you know, leading up to getting fired, you know, all the stuff being said about you and, that's a lot easier for us to block out as head coaches, because we know it comes with the job and we know, a lot of time there's no factual basis to a lot of that stuff. But, you know, your family, it's really hard for them to block that out, especially kids, because they're around it. You know, it's impossible to get away from sometimes. So that's who you feel for, though. Those are the real heroes behind the scenes in what we do. And it isn't easy. I think from, you know, my end, in order to sleep at night as a head coach, I think, and to survive in the league for, you know, by the end of this contract, it'll be over 20 years for me. I think you have to believe in what you do. And you have to trust your gut, and you have to approach every situation with the experiences you've had, but not compromising, you know, your beliefs. And if that costs you your job, then that costs you your job. And usually people out there will recognize that and you'll get another opportunity. I think that's what's happened for me over the years.
Have you ever walked away and said to someone, you know what, I might be done.
Yeah.
This is, you know, really what? Hard. I'm not. And you're, that whole concept you talk about, that 2 weeks before, the dead man walking syndrome is awful. It's the worst. Yeah. We've all been through it.
Yeah. I think we all go through that as coaches. I mean, I talked to Paul Maurice probably 2 weeks ago, and we kind of revisited when he was in Winnipeg and he walked away. And he said it, you know, at that point he was done. You know, he really was. He thought it was the end of the road. He was just, you know, physically, mentally exhausted. Why do I want to sign up to do this again? And then the Florida opportunity came along. He had some time off to reflect, and then the Florida opportunity came along, and, you know, and then he wins two cups in a row. You know, that's how quickly it changes. So, but for sure, I think any coach would be lying, especially veteran coaches, that, you know, you're not doing it to feed your family anymore. You know, you're doing it because you love what you do. So I think anybody in that position at some point goes, you know, do I really want to sign up for all that again? Because the good is great, but, you know, there's a lot of bad parts to it too that you deal with, probably a lot more than the good.
Did you ever talk to Patrick Waugh after the fact?
I did. I called Patrick, within 48 hours after I got to Long Island. You know, I wanted to talk to him. And he was very respectful and insightful. And I wasn't calling him. I was calling him as a coach to coach, just to say, hey, listen, you know, I've been there. I've been there lots of times. You know, I want you to know I'm not coming in here and going to change a lot of stuff. And I am going to recognize the good things that you guys did as a staff and how hard you worked here, because I know that for a fact. A lot of times that doesn't happen when a coach takes over. A lot of times you just get the flip side of that, everything he did wrong. You know, all the things that he dropped the ball on or didn't pay attention to or lost the players, or, you know, that's usually the focus. And that really drives me nuts, because, you know, I know the places I've left, and I know for sure with Patrick and the guys I've replaced, I think there's not enough acknowledgement for how hard those guys worked to the end, and the groundwork they laid prior to you getting there. And I wanted to make sure that I acknowledged that with him.
Is the new coach contacting the old coach sort of a new trend in the last few years?
You know what? I don't know.
I just feel like I've heard about it more.
Yeah. Maybe you hear about it more. I think the business has become so tough. The tenures have become so short. The leash is so short. The turnover so great. I think it's galvanized our group as coaches, you know, that I think there's more an awareness to take care of each other a little bit because of how hard it is now. I hope that's the case.
Do you know much about Long Island?
I lived and coached in Jersey for 5 years. So, you know, it's spent quite a bit of time there, either obviously playing the Islanders in the division, yeah, but also going through there with minor hockey. My kids played, AAA hockey in Jersey. So the Long Island Gulls and Royals were in their division. We spent a lot of time rolling up and through that area. So beautiful area of the country. I'm really excited. You know, New Jersey gets a really bad rap. It's actually a phenomenal place to live and work. And I feel Long Island, you know, is the same.
Have you watched the arena playoffs?
I have been watching the playoffs, and it is a great
jumped
arena.
Out at you?
I'm going to start with John first on the arena, because I'll tell you what, yeah. Lou Lamoriello's fingerprints are all over that arena and practice rink, and maybe the two best working facilities that I've been in as an NHL head coach. Phenomenal facilities for players and coaches to work in both environments, which shouldn't surprise me having worked for Lou before, but the detail, how well it's done, all those things.
The corridors are so
unbelievable.
Wide. Yeah.
And the dressing room. Well, I mean, you know, I wanted to see the dressing room, when it was built. You know, they've been in that building now, what, four or five years, maybe. But with Lou in charge, you know, no one was allowed in, like not even a secret tour in the back, like, hey, take a look. So,
yeah.
And I knew the video guy, he goes, I'd love to bring you in, but he goes, you know, Lou, there's zero chance you could get in there. So it was like
Lou likes you.
Oh yeah. And Lou likes me. It was like getting a back room view to the crown jewels that no one's seen in 100 years. It was like, I get to come in here and actually take a look at the room now. But it phenomenal facilities, to work. And I shouldn't be surprised that it would be first class with Lou's fingerprints on it. And, I have been watching playoff hockey. You know, all of a sudden I'm watching three games a night and really invested in it and excited about it. And it's great. And I'll tell you what, it is wide open this year. You know, really, I can't tell you. I think Colorado and Carolina look really good at this point and probably the favorites. But after that, I think it's wide open, wide open. And as we all know, an injury at the wrong time to the wrong guy, some puck luck, some overtime games that go the wrong way. I mean, that can change really quickly.
Are we seeing a shift in philosophy of offense of quality versus quantity when it comes to shots?
I'll tell you what, I don't think there's anybody in a coach's room going, don't shoot the puck. I think there's a couple things to that, John. I think tracking data has brought shot totals down. If you think about the old shot clocks, it was a guy up in the press box and mm-hmm. anything within 6 inches of the net, even if it was going wide, they hit the button. Okay. Now it's an actual analytics. They have a net and anything an inch, a quarter an inch off the net is not going to be a shot. So I think immediately you eliminated, I don't know how many shots a night, but it's got to be 3 or 4 or 5 a night. And Darren's a goalie. He could probably tell you more, but I think that's a small piece of it. I think there is a more awareness to try and make east-west plays and look for seams and things like that than maybe there was in the past. But I think you know, some of the offensive coaching going on, I think, plays a piece in that too. But that's only a small piece too. It's interesting. I think power plays used to be built off a lot of point shots and traffic, mm-hmm. And now it's a lot more plays down low and east-west plays and plays to the bumper. So if I had to say it, I think it'd be a combination of those three things, a couple shots a night in each of those areas, and you're down, 5 or 6 shots a night.
Yeah, the emphasis on wagering and the impact on the game with prop bets, they've dialed in what's an actual shot and what's not an actual shot.
Right.
Even if goaltender makes a save and it's going wide, they don't count that as a shot anymore. So,
right. And how many a night would that have been in the old days, you know?
Five?
Yeah, I think so.
Five each way, at least?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
So before we go, you finally got your golf game in a good spot. Now you're going to screw this whole thing up?
Well, it's always been in a better spot than your game. And I can take a year. I can take a year, go back to work, and still take you on.
When was the last time that DeBoer and Maurice, at least one of you, wasn't in the playoffs?
Oh my God.
That's a pretty long string between the two of you.
Yeah.
That's
a great point. So the last time I missed would have been in Vegas. We had a bunch of injuries. He was still in Winnipeg.
Right.
But no, that's the year he might have been that might have been the year that he was out. Or maybe he was
so
back.
It's not that far.
Or maybe he was back in Florida then. By then, I don't know the exact, but it hasn't been many for sure. John.
No,
yeah.
For more than 2 decades.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's rare that John asks a question that he doesn't already know the answer to.
I learned that from the commissioner. Gary Bettman taught me that a long time ago. Only ask questions you know the answer to.
Say hi to everybody. We're happy for you, and we can't wait to see what you do in Long Island, pal.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And remember, it's on Long Island, not in Long Island. On Long Island. Not in.
All right. Long Island. Got it.
I don't know how you get by without John. I don't know what's going to happen. I will be back with more 100% Hockey.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here. Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
I liked your question about Schaefer and the Olympic team, given Pete's involvement in Milano. But he's right. You can't have two teenagers.
Why not? You know, sometimes
there's other guys that are more experienced, and we value experience in our game.
So, what you say is logical, but when you look at what has happened, both in particular, well, I guess in five or six of the nations that are involved in under 16s and under 18s and under 20s and world championships and the Olympics. These guys have tons of international experience. They play head to head with guys from the time.
I'm not talking international experience. I'm just talking about experience. Guys that have been around the block a few times that are still at that level.
I'll tell you what.
Now, if Celebrini's not around, I might have considered Schaefer, but not two of them.
Well, obviously, they needed something else because they didn't win.
Oh, my goodness. You make it sound like they lost in the quarterfinals.
They almost lost in the quarterfinal.
What's going on in your backyard of Toronto?
It's good because I picked up all the leaves yesterday, and I'm mowing the lawn today.
Okay. So you're more productive than what's going on with the other leaves? Or leaves?
I have leaves. They have leaves.
They have leaves. It seems surreal.
I almost don't want us to predict anything anymore because I don't know. I mean, the names that are out there now, Scott White, John Chayka, I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't see it. You know, I know Keith Pelley. I've known Keith Pelley a long time. It appears that Keith is trying to reinvent the wheel. It really does. He's trying to reinvent something. And last I checked, round wheels work. And there's just something missing in all of this. And perhaps it's all smokescreen. I mean, I say that as almost wishful thinking. Almost wishful thinking that there's something going on in Toronto that we don't know about, that no one knows about, that they've done a good job keeping it secret. Those are hard. It's hard to understand what they're trying to do now. It really is.
It's an odd strategy given what they're being painted as right now. If they have something in their back pocket.
Right. Agreed. But perhaps we just don't know. Perhaps we have everyone on the outside. Perhaps we don't have a clue what the plan is.
Do you think the reaction from media and fans will have an impact on what they eventually do? Or could it change the mind of the higher-ups, Pelley and company?
No, I don't. But that doesn't mean people won't start doing it. I mean, if anybody reads the Toronto Sun and reads Steve Simmons, his Sunday column was scathing against both Scott White and John Chayka. Scathing to the point where if Keith Pelley, if Edward Rogers, Tony Staffieri, the two honchos at Rogers that own the club, read it, they would have second thought. But you know, when you're that high in the totem pole, you insulate yourself and you make your judgments. And that if they have interviewed both of these gentlemen and think that one of them is smart enough to run the operation, they don't care. They won't care what public opinion is. But I'll tell you what, it's fragile right now, Darren. It is fragile when it comes to this. I do in a strange way. I feel for Keith. I really
Why?
Do. I do because if he makes the wrong decision, he called it at his press conference, at his ill-fated press conference. He called it the most important decision in the history of the company, or something to that effect. If he makes the wrong decision, this will taint him for the rest of his life. the rest of his life. And it, just, I mean, look at what people, and it's only people and what they say. And so some people say, I don't care what that is. But look what, look how John Ferguson Jr. is judged in the game of hockey and in public opinion because he was put in a really tough spot. And he's never been
able to get
it.
I think he's judged in Toronto. I don't think it's the game of hockey. But those are two different things.
But in the game of hockey, he's judged for his prowess as a scout and his administration. Mm-hmm. But I think it's tainted his ability to get another general manager's job. I really do. And I like John. John's a good person. But it has hurt him. I worry from that perspective, from a personal perspective for Keith as well.
I thought everything that was said at that press conference, the Pelly press conference, I expected a deeper list of candidates. And one thing that's become clear is there's not going to be a president of hockey operations. They're not going down that path.
I don't know. We know that.
Well, why would you hire the general manager before the president of hockey operations?
Maybe they're all being hired at the same time. You know, have one more press conference, announce all of them.
Why wouldn't the president of hockey operations hire the general manager?
Well, is he not? You're right. You're absolutely right. But we don't know what's behind the curtain. We don't know all of the stuff that goes
on. Well,
I think
we know enough based on some of the reporting.
I'm not so sure. Or maybe it's just wishful
thinking. Well, if you're not so sure, then you know something. So tell me.
Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part. I'm just trying to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I tell you what, there is a ton of doubt.
Every time you go through a situation like this, you have a tendency to say, I've never seen it this bad. I've never watched the Toronto Maple Leafs go through something like this. But they have in the past. It's just
20 years
you don't expect it right now.
And I think what's more frustrating for Maple Leaf fans than anything else is that it has taken them 15 years to rebuild the organization on the business side, rebuild the organization to be in the playoffs for 9 consecutive years. You know, the drafting of players when they were in the lottery, like Marner, like Nylander, like Matthews. You know, the free agent signings, John Tavares. Everybody thinks that they were pointed in the right direction. And now it appears like it's all evaporating, Darren. All evaporating.
So how does this affect Austin Matthews?
Exactly. Good question.
He's watching this going, do I want to be part of this?
That is a fair question.
That's the most fascinating thing.
By the way, was the puck in the net last night?
Yes. Yes. Okay. The Anaheim... Good.
Yeah,
Edmonton game.
Yeah.
I didn't need any parallaxial.
No, I know parallax view. No. But there's a way. I was actually thinking as I was watching it, there is a simple way to show everybody how it goes in.
How
it was. No, I'm not telling you. No, you're gonna. The network will steal the idea. Because they watch everything we do.
Okay, you just snubbed our viewers and our listeners. You know something you won't tell us.
Yeah.
I hope people react to you and say, thanks, John. Thanks for nothing.
It won't be the first time.
On the Edmonton front, I will say, how did they call it a goal on the ice after no signal at the moment and then the conversation? Because you know as much as anybody, how you call it on the ice impacts what the situation room can do.
Right. And what I get a giant kick out of is the officials getting together to discuss it before they announce it. And three of them were 60 feet away.
Yeah.
So they had no chance of knowing what was going on.
Remember Major League?
Yeah.
Or Bull Durham. It was Bull Durham when the pitcher coach goes out and goes, okay, what are we going to do for a wedding gift here? Candlesticks.
That's right.
They're talking about, going to get my baseball movies right.
Well, maybe they were just fun today with to say, maybe they were just saying, if we hurry up, we can get the red eye.
Yeah.
By the way, as of Tuesday, all the awards finalists start to come out.
The finalists, right?
Yeah.
Are they doing an award show?
I don't know.
And the draft this year, you might be able to tell me this. It's in Buffalo.
Yeah.
But it's a remote draft.
It's the same as LA.
Yeah, but that was in a theater. Are they holding it in the rink? Because you don't need all that space, because you don't need the floor with all the teams. So
maybe
I'm just trying to
do it. Maybe they're going to do it in the small arena.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, do they dress something up like that?
Yeah.
The problem is the Bisons are playing. I was hoping the Bisons would be playing so I could go to a game or two.
You checked the schedule already?
Yeah. One of the first things
The Jays are playing. You could come up. I'll get you a ticket to the Jays.
Yeah, Jays are playing the Mets right after that.
Hey, that means my pal Johnny
Gibbons. Research.
My pal John Gibbons will be here. That's good.
We'll talk to everybody next time. Thumbs up. And make sure you let John know. Hey, he's holding out on us. Maybe we can break him down with your help, the listeners, and the subscribers to 100% Hockey. We're coming for you, buddy. Talk to you next time.
Lonely at the top.